Good morning and welcome to Sun Sounds of Tucson, Arizona. Today's date is January the 9th, 2025. My name is Alan Jones and I will be reading the news today from the Arizona Daily Star. Our headlines for today: thousands flee areas of LA as wildfires kill five. DOJ offers partial release. Mexico dispersing many migrants far from U.S. border. And judge in Arizona can't be forced to regulate pumping along river. Our first story: thousands flee areas of LA as wildfires kill five. Attribution to John Sewer, Christopher Weber, and Julie Watson of the Associated Press. Massive wildfires roaring through the Los Angeles area left neighborhoods in ruins Wednesday, killing at least five people and threatening landmarks made famous by Hollywood as desperate residents escaped through flames that kept growing with help from hurricane-force winds. Three major blazes that erupted just a day earlier grew substantially while a wind fanned the flames and spread embers. The fire blanketed the city with a thick cloud of smoke and ash and destroyed homes across the metropolitan area from the Pacific Coast inland to Pasadena, home of the famed Rose Parade. One of the fires was the most destructive in the modern history of the city of LA and reduced grocery stores and banks to rubble, leveling entire blocks. With thousands of firefighters already attacking the flames, the Los Angeles Fire Department put out a plea for off-duty and out-of-state firefighters to help. The winds temporarily stopped aircraft from dumping water from above until they were able to resume flights. More than 1,000 structures were destroyed, and many people were hurt in the fires, including first responders, Los Angeles County Fire Chief Anthony Marone said. Images of the devastation showed luxurious homes that collapsed in a whirlwind of flaming embers, swimming pools were blanketed with soot, and sports cars slumped on melted tires. This morning we woke up to a dark cloud over all of Los Angeles, but it is darkest for those who are most intimately impacted by these fires. It has been an immensely painful 24 hours, LA County Supervisor Lindsay Horvath said. At least 70,000 people were ordered to evacuate, a number that kept changing because evacuation orders were continually being issued, officials said. The flames marched towards highly populated and affluent neighborhoods, including Calabasas and Santa Monica, home to California's richest and famous. Hollywood stars including Mark Hamill, Mandy Moore, and James Wood were among those forced to flee. In Palisades Village, the public library, two major grocery stores, a pair of banks, and several boutiques were destroyed. It's just really weird coming back to somewhere that doesn't really exist anymore, said Dylan Vincent, who returned to the neighborhood to retrieve some items and saw that his elementary school had burned down and that entire blocks had been flattened. Jenny Garrido, a 39-year-old producer and director from Pasadena, said she was alarmed when her neighbor came to check on her. "When I opened my door, it smelled like I was living inside of a fireplace," she said. "Then I also started to see the ash, and I've never seen that in my life, like raining ash." Flames moved so quickly that many had little time to escape. Police sought shelter inside their patrol cars, and residents at a senior living center were pushed in wheelchairs and hospital beds down a street to safety in the foothills northeast of L.A. On Wednesday, many of them were at the Pasadena Convention Center waiting to hear where they would be staying. One of the fires ripped through a Pacific Palisades neighborhood, a hillside area along the coast dotted with celebrity homes and memorialized by the Beach Boys in their 1960s hit Surfin' USA. In the race to get to safety, roadways became impassable when scores of people abandoned their vehicles and fled on foot, some toting suitcases. "People were getting out of the cars with their dogs and babies and bags," said Kelsey Trainer, who escaped while ash fell all around and fires burned on both sides of the road. California wildfire season typically begins in June or July and runs through October, according to the Western Fire Chiefs Association. But January wildfires are not unprecedented. There was one in 2022 and 10 in 2021, according to CAL FIRE. The season is beginning earlier and ending later due to rising temperatures and decreased rainfall tied to climate change, according to recent data. Rains that usually end fire season are often delayed, meaning fires can burn through the winter months, the association said. Dry winds, including the notorious Santa Anas, have contributed to warmer than average temperatures in Southern California, where there's been little rain so far this season. Southern California has not seen more than 0.1 inches of rain since early May. The winds increased to 80 miles per hour Wednesday, and according to reports received by the National Weather Service, and could top 100 miles per hour in mountains and foothills. Our next story. DOJ offers partial release. Attribution to Eric Tucker and Alana Durkin Richer of the Associated Press. Justice Department said Wednesday it intends to release Special Counsel Jack Smith's findings on Donald Trump's efforts to undo the results of the 2020 Republican presidential election, but will keep under wraps for now the rest of the report, focused on the president-elect's hoarding of classified documents at his Mar-a-Lago estate. The revelation was made in a filing to a federal appeals court that considered a defense request to block the release of the two volumes report, while charges remain pending against two Trump co-defendants in the Florida case accusing the Republican former president and current president-elect of illegally hoarding classified documents. Aline Cannon, the Trump-appointed judge presiding over the classified documents case, granted the request Tuesday, issuing a temporary block on the report. The Justice Department said it would proceed with plans to release the first of two volumes centered on the election interference case, but would make the classified documents section of the report available only to the chairman and ranking members of the House-Senate Judiciary Committees for their private review as long as the case against Trump's co-defendants, Trump's valet Walt Nauta, and Mar-a-Lago property manager Carlos de Oliveira is ongoing. This limited disclosure will further the public interest in keeping congressional leadership apprised of a significant matter within the department while safeguarding defendants' interests, the filing said. The announcement lessens the likelihood that the report on the classified documents investigation, which of all inquiries against the Trump seemed to carry the greatest legal threat, would ever be released, given that Trump's Justice Department almost certainly will not make the documents public, even after the case against Nauta and de Oliveira is resolved. Trump repeatedly denied wrongdoing and is critical of Smith. It was not immediately clear when the election interference report might be released. The filing asks the Atlanta-based U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit to reverse Cannon's order that appeared to at least temporarily halt the release of the entire report. The Justice Department asked the appeals court to undo the freeze and make clear that its resolution of this question should be the last word, though it also acknowledged the potential that the Supreme Court might be asked to weigh in. In its brief, the Justice Department said that the Attorney General's authority to publicly release the election interference section of the special counsel's report is clear and that Trump's co-defendants have no legal argument to block the disclosure of a section that has nothing to do with them. Indeed, with respect to Volume 1 of the final report, defendants are hardly differently situated than any other member of the public, the department said. The report is expected to detail findings and charging decisions in Smith's two investigations. The classified documents inquiry was dismissed in July by Cannon, who concluded that Smith's appointment was illegal. Smith's appeal of the dismissal of charges against Nauta and de Oliveira, who were charged along with Trump with obstructing the investigation, is still active, and their lawyers argued this week that the release of a report while proceedings were pending would be prejudicial and unfair. The election interference case was significantly narrowed by a Supreme Court ruling on presidential immunity. The court ruled then, for the first time, that former presidents have broad immunity from prosecution, all but ending prospects Trump could be tried before the November election. Smith's team abandoned both cases in November after Trump's presidential win, citing Justice Department policy that prohibits the federal prosecution of sitting presidents. Justice Department regulations call for special counsels appointed by the Attorney General to submit a confidential report at the conclusion of their investigation. It's then up to the Attorney General to decide what to make public. Attorney General Merrick Garland has made public in their entirety the report produced by the special counsel, who operated under his watch, including Robert Hur's report on President Joe Biden's handling of classified information and John Durham's report on the FBI's Russian election interference investigation. The court's request from De Oliveira and Norta to block reports also included a letter from Trump's legal team, including Todd Blanche, his pick for Deputy Attorney General, that made similar points and used language that echoed some of Trump's own attacks on Smith and his work. Blanche told Garland that the release of any confidential report prepared by his out-of-control private citizen, unconstitutionally posing as a prosecutor, would be nothing more than a lawless political stunt designed to politically harm President Trump and justify the huge sums of taxpayer money Smith unconstitutionally spent on his failed and dismissed cases. Our next story. Judge, Arizona cannot be forced to regulate pumping along river. Attribution to Tony Davis of the Arizona Daily Star. Environmentalists' effort to force quick state action to regulate groundwater pumping along the imperiled San Pedro River were quashed by a court this week. A Superior Court judge dismissed a lawsuit from the Tucson-based Center for Biological Diversity and other parties that sought a court order to start state proceedings toward designating the Upper San Pedro River Basin as a state-run active management area. Creation of an AMA in the basin would have required the Arizona Department of Water Resources to set goals and a detailed management plan for reducing pumping along the San Pedro. In the face of declining river flows, the dropping well levels, an AMA would also have the power to impose water conservation requirements on homeowners, farmers, and other businesses in the area. The 1,825-square-mile basin covers the river's watershed north from the Mexican border to the Narrows, a spot where the river narrows sharply a bit north of Benson. It lies about 50 miles southeast of Tucson. In his ruling Monday, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Scott Blaney concluded the environmentalists failed to make the case that ADWR would be required at this time to start work towards creating a San Pedro Basin AMA. Blaney ruled that an alternative method to creating an AMA is available, so a court order to start work on an AMA now isn't justifiable. He also said the legislature gives the state broad discretion as to when it needs to conduct reviews of whether an AMA is needed, even though it's now been 20 years since such a review was conducted. ADWR advocated for this outcome, so we are naturally pleased with this decision. Nevertheless, the matter remains subject to appeals, so we will refrain from further comment, Department spokesman Doug McEachran said on Wednesday. The office of Governor Katie Hobbs, who was also named as a defendant in the lawsuit and has sought to have her office removed from the case, said in a statement, "We are pleased with the Superior Court's decision to dismiss the lawsuit. The case was a distraction from the critical work we are doing to protect Arizona water." Governor Hobbs remains committed to ensuring we use the right tools to protect our water resources and has consistently championed a resilient water future since taking office, the statement said. Robin Silver, a board member for the Center for Biological Diversity, called the ruling another sad day for the San Pedro, and said his group will consider appealing the decision to the Arizona Court of Appeals. His bigger frustration is that the governor has not taken major steps to protect the San Pedro when the ADWR, with her backing, has ordered a creation of an AMA in the Wilcox Basin and limited housing development in Maricopa County to protect its declining aquifer, he said. It's not comprehensible, Silver said. It's not like the San Pedro doesn't need an active management area. It does. It's not like she can't create an AMA by executive action. She's already proven she could do that in the Wilcox Basin. Responding, a spokesperson for the governor said, the administration is actively monitoring the San Pedro Basin, funding water conservation and recharge measures to protect the river, and increasing cooperation with Mexico via the Arizona-Mexico Commission to find ways to protect the San Pedro River. Governor Hobbs is advancing significant reforms across all areas of water management and is pushing for more tools to protect water supplies in rural communities. While the legislature did not get a bill to the governor's desk to reform rural groundwater protections last year, we remained optimistic that bipartisan solutions will be achieved in 2025. Silver said Hobbs' measures amount to smoke and mirrors and do nothing of substance to protect the San Pedro now, while the river is dying. The river has suffered over the past few decades from a chronic problem of overpumping of the underlying groundwater that has created a long-term deficit between water supplies and demand. While various conservation measures have trimmed the deficit in recent years, many scientists say the river could or will dry up in coming decades if measures aren't taken to eliminate the deficit. In his ruling, Blady found that the environmental groups filing suit have an alternative means of getting an AMA created. Gathering petition signatures in support from 10% of all registered voters in the basin. That would trigger a referendum on whether to create an AMA, the kind of measure that succeeded at the polls in 2022 in the Douglas Basin, but failed the same year in the Wilcox Basin. Because the legislature provided an alternative pathway designating an AMA, plaintiffs' argument that this court should issue relief against the executive branch in less compelling, the judge wrote. Also, Blaney wrote, the state law that environmentalists relied on in filing their suit give ADWR discretion as to when to conduct a review of whether an AMA is needed. The law required the ADWR director to periodically review all areas not included in AMAs to determine whether they meet state criteria for creating one. But the law doesn't say how often periodically is, the judge said. Although plaintiffs are correct that periodically generally means occurring at regular intervals or from time to time, the duration of the intervals is left to the discretion of the director, Blaney wrote. Plaintiffs asked the court to improperly substitute its own opinion regarding how regularly the director must conduct the review, a determination for which the director and his staff are better equipped to make. Silver said the ruling doesn't pass the straight-faced test. There is no way any legislature would pass a law including the word periodically based on an expectation that a future review would not be done for decades, especially when the situation on the river has changed so dramatically, he said. Attorney General Chris Mays had taken a similar stance toward the AMA issue in an April 2023 letter to ADWR Director Tom Buschdecki, noting that the state had reviewed whether an AMA is warranted in the San Pedro Basin in 1988, as well as in 2005, she added. Two studies of a single basin in a 40-year period does not satisfy the statutory duty to periodically review whether an area merits designation of an AMA. Our next story. Mexico dispersing many migrants far from U.S. border. Attribution to Antonio Castillo and Maria Verza of the Associated Press. About 100 migrants from various countries wandered directionless and disoriented through the streets of a troubled Pacific Coast resort of Acapulco. After walking for a couple of weeks through the southern Mexico with hundreds of other migrants, they accepted an offer from immigration officials to come to Acapulco with the idea they could continue their journey north towards the U.S. border. Instead, they found themselves stuck on Monday. 2 weeks ahead of the President-elect Donald Trump's second inauguration, Mexico continues dissolving attention-grabbing migrant caravans and dispersing migrants throughout the country to keep them far from the U.S. border, while simultaneously limiting how many accumulate in any one place. The policy of dispersion and exhaustion has become the center of the Mexican government's immigration policy in the recent years, and last year succeeded in significantly reducing the number of migrants reaching the U.S. border, said the former chief of Mexico's immigration agency. Mexico's current administration hopes that the lower numbers will give them some defense from the Trump's pressure, said Guillem, who left the administration of former President Andrés Manuel López Obrador after Trump threatened to impose tariffs over immigration during his first presidency. Acapulco would seem to be a strange destination for migrants, once a crown jewel of Mexico's tourism industry. The city now suffers under the thumb of organized crime and is still struggling to climb back after taking a direct hit from devastating Hurricane Otis in 2023. On Monday, Mexican tourists enjoyed the final hours of their holiday beach vacations, while migrants slept in the streets or tried to find ways to resume their journeys north. Immigration officials told us that they were going to give us a permit to transit the country freely for 10 to 15 days, and it wasn't like that, said a 28-year-old Venezuelan Ender Antonio Castaneda. They left us dumped here without any way to get out. They won't sell us bus tickets. They won't sell us anything. Castaneda, like thousands of other migrants, had left the southern city of Tapachula, near the Guatemala border. More than a half dozen caravans of about 1,500 migrants each have set out from the Tapachula in recent weeks, but none of them made it very far. Authorities let them walk for days until they're exhausted and then offer to bus them to various cities where they say their immigration status will be reviewed, which could mean any number of things. Some have landed in Acapulco, where about a dozen sleep at a Catholic church near the immigration agency offices. Several dozen gathered outside the offices on Monday looking for information, but no one would tell them anything. Castaneda, who had just received money from his family and was desperate to leave, picked a van driver he judged to be the most trustworthy among various offering rides for up to five times the normal price for a bus ticket to Mexico City. Some migrants have discovered the permits authorities give them allow them to travel only within the state of Guerrero, where Acapulco is located. Other migrants have better luck. On Sunday, the latest immigrant caravan broke up after hundreds received free transit permits to go anywhere in Mexico for a specified number of days. Cuban Diane Sanchez, 33, and her husband were among them. "We're a little scared by the lack of safety getting on buses, that they are going to stop us," she said. Mexico's drug cartels frequently target migrants for kidnapping and extortion, though many migrants say authorities extort them too. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum insists her immigration strategy has a humanitarian focus and has allowed more migrants to leave southernmost Mexico. But some migration advocates note that migrants are being taken to violent areas. In a concern shared by the Reverend Leonardo Morales, the priest at the Catholic Church in Acapulco near the immigration agency office, he said that in November, two or three immigration agency buses arrived with migrants, including entire families. Last weekend, two more arrived carrying all adults. even though Acapulco isn't on the usual migration route and was unprepared to receive migrants, several priests have coordinated support for them with water, food, and clothing. We know they're going through a very difficult time, with a lot of needs. They arrive without money, Morales said. Migrants quickly realize that finding work in Acapulco is difficult. After Otis' destruction, the federal government sent hundreds of soldiers and National Guard troops to provide security and start reconstruction. Last year, another storm, John, wrought widespread flooding. But violence in Acapulco hasn't relented. Acapulco has one of Mexico's highest rates of homicides. Cab drivers and small business owners complain anonymously of rising extortion. Large companies have balked at rebuilding under the current circumstances. Honduran Jorge Neftali Alvarenga was grateful to have escaped the Mexican state of Chiapas along the Guatemalan border, but was already disillusioned. "To an extent, they lied to us," said Alvarenga, who thought he was going to Mexico City. "We asked for an agreement to send us to Mexico City for work, or to other places like Monterrey, an industrial city in the north, with more work opportunities. Now he doesn't know what to do." We will now move to the Tucson and region news. Our first story. Cold blast of winter to linger this week. Attribution to the Arizona Daily Star. A weather system that brought windy conditions to Tucson early on Wednesday brought Tucson a blast of wintry weather that had been missing here for most of the season. A freeze warning is in effect Thursday and Friday for the extended metro area, the National Weather Service in Tucson said. Overnight lows could drop to as low as 25 degrees west of the Tucson metro area and as low as 14 degrees in areas east of the city, the forecast shows. For Tucson, the high temperature is expected to be about 58 degrees on Thursday and 57 on Friday. The high temperature here on Saturday is forecast at 63. The low temperatures for Tucson is about 32 degrees every day through Saturday, the Weather Service says. Shortly after noon on Wednesday, a band of rain and heavy snow showers extended from southwest Cochise County, northwest of the Oracle Junction area, according to the Weather Service. Snow in parts of the area was expected to continue into the evening. Tucson International Airport, where no measurable rain has fallen since November the 3rd, got a trace of rain on Wednesday. It sprinkled for 12 minutes, said Weather Service meteorologist Gary Zell. The city's official weather stats are recorded at the airport. Our next story. Tucson OKs building a toilet-to-tap water plant with federal money. Attribution to Charles Borla of the Arizona Daily Star. The Tucson City Council has approved plans to build a toilet-to-tap water plant with up to $86.7 million in federal funds. Mayor Regina Romero and council members accepted the agreement, negotiated by Tucson Water and the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation, to build the plant by a 7-0 vote on Tuesday night. Under the agreement, the Bureau will pay the city up to $86.7 million to build the Advanced Water Purification Direct Potable Reuse Demonstration Facility before 2032. Once finished, the plant will convert about 2.5 million gallons a day of treated wastewater from the Pima County's Run Tres Rios wastewater plant into drinkable water, the Star previously reported. That 2.5 million gallons represents between 2% and 5% of the city's total drinking water supply, Tucson Water Director John Kaimak said. Councilman Kevin Dahl called it a monumental agreement that will provide a new source from an old source of potable drinking water. "Desert cities need water from every single source, and I wanted to point out that this is available to us because Tucson does so much water conservation," Dahl said. "That has allowed us to make some money, selling back the water to other users, and in this case, we're trading water for new infrastructure. Water conservation is key. As we negotiate for things, we need to negotiate for more water conservation. There's more we can do," said Dahl. In return, Tucson is agreeing to leave about 56,000 acre-feet of Central Arizona Project water supply from the Colorado River in Lake Mead over a decade. The CAP water savings the city is accepting in return for money to build the wastewater plant will be on top of 110,000 acre-feet of cap water Tucson already agreed to leave in the lake in calendar year 2023, 24, and 25 in return for additional compensation. Another part of the agreement, approved Tuesday night, puts the city on the hook for leaving another 50,000 acre-feet of cap water in the lake in return for another $20 million in federal funding. A northwest side area was chosen for the plant location, in part because those residents have lost a major portion of their local supply due to the shutdown of a number of drinking wells in that area, due to contamination by the forever chemicals known as PFAS compounds. For that reason, in November of 23, the Environmental Protection Agency invested $30 million into building a second water treatment facility for Northwest Tucson water wells, after city officials began testing them a few years prior and identified more than two dozen wells that had to be shut down due to PFAS chemicals found in the water. The city's One Water Long-Range Water Plan, adopted a year ago, called for the utility to build small pilot wastewater for drinking projects as a possible preview for building a larger plant to serve water for more people. Currently, recycled wastewater from the Tres Rios plant is dumped into the Santa Cruz River, where it eventually leaves the Tucson area by flowing downstream into Pinal County, Kirmec said. Around the West, many cities, including Phoenix and Scottsdale, now are actively studying or planning to build wastewater-to-drinking plants as a way of replacing other supplies, such as groundwater and Colorado River water, that have diminished in recent years due to drought and overpumping. The Northwest Side facility is possible in part because the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality adopted regulations last year that authorize local entities to treat wastewater for drinking through a method known as direct potable reuse. Our next story. GOP lawmaker now sides with Democrats on ballot order. Attribution to Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services. A Republican lawmaker has decided Democrats were right all along. It's not fair to have ballot order determined by who won the last governor's race. But Scottsdale Representative Alexander Kolodin also acknowledged that the fact there's now a Democrat in the top office and a prior GOP advantage has disappeared has at least something to do with his new proposal to change the system. His House bill 2045 would require that the order of candidates for each race on the general election ballot be rotated among voting precincts in each county so that each party gets an equal chance of being in the first position. The current system, the one based on who won the last governor's race, meant that in 2022, election Republicans were listed ahead of Democrats in all races in 11 of the state's 15 counties, where Republican Doug Ducey outpolled Democrat David Garcia for governor. That included Maricopa County, which has more voters than the other 14 counties combined. The Democratic National Committee and its allies thought that system so unfair that they filed suit in 2019 asking a federal judge to rule it illegal. To back his arguments, they cited research from a political science professor who estimated that first listed candidates get an average advantage of 2.2 percentage points. The margin can reach as high as 5.6 percentage points, said Professor Jonathan Roden. That explains why Arizona law requires rotation of names on primary election ballots, said Democrats attorney Sarah Gonski. She urged U.S. District Court Judge Diane Humatawa to extend that rotation to a general election. The judge declined, and the DNC had no better luck going all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. But now Kolodin says they have a point. It provides statistical advantage to the group of candidates first listed first, he said on Wednesday, exactly what the Democrats were arguing in court. So what's changed? One thing is that the Democrat Katie Hobbs beat Republican Carrie Lake in the 2022 gubernatorial race. That meant Democrats got top billing in 2024 election in five counties, including Maricopa and Pima, where three out of every four registered voters reside. That would be repealed and replaced by the system of random rotation if the Republican-controlled legislature approves Culloden's plan and the governor signs it. Culloden conceded there is some political motivation behind his move to have the legislature revamp the law versus having it decided by a federal judge. He said Humitawa was right in concluding it was not the role of the courts to make such decisions. That's the role of the legislature, he said, which then and now has been controlled by Republicans. The legislature saw fit to fairly, in my view, provide that advantage to the party that had won the governor's office, he said, of the law in place where Ducey won his races for governor. Put another way, Culloden said, Republican lawmakers had every right to set up a system designed to benefit their candidates. It's not fair to take that advantage away from a political party in the middle of a gubernatorial term, he said, saying the GOP, having won 11 counties in 2018, including Maricopa, was entitled to get the prize of first position in future elections. And you get to keep that prize for the 4 years, Culloden said. Anyway, he said, it's not like he's trying to take away the current Democrats' advantage, at least not right away. It doesn't take effect until 2027, he said. What that means, he said, is that even if his measure becomes law, Democrat candidates still will be listed first in the five affected counties for the upcoming election. That's the one in which Hobbs herself will be up for a new term. But it will make irrelevant beyond that, at least for ballot order, whether she wins or loses. Our next story. How Arizona House delegation voted on migrant detention. Attribution to Laura Gershoni of the Arizona Republic. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill on Tuesday named for Laken Riley, a Georgia nursing student killed in February by a man who was in the country illegally. The Laken Riley Act would require U.S. immigration authorities to detain undocumented immigrants who are charged with theft-related crimes. It also includes a provision that would empower state attorney generals to sue the federal government over harms caused by illegal immigration. Riley's case drew national attention as part of the discussion about immigration, a major campaign issue in last year's presidential race. 48 House Democrats joined Republicans to pass the bill by a margin of 264 to 159. The measure now heads to the U.S. Senate. It will need a handful of Democrat votes in order to pass. Here's how Arizona's House delegation voted. All but two of Arizona's House members voted in favor of the Laken Riley Act. The state's six Republican representatives vote to pass the bill, as did Representative Greg Stanton, a Democrat freshman, Representative Yasemin Ansari, a progressive Democrat from Arizona, voted against the measure. Representative Rawal Grijalva, another progressive, did not vote. Grijalva has been in and out of Congress after his cancer treatment. The last time the Laken Riley Act came up for a vote was in March of 2024. At that time, all of Arizona's U.S. House members voted in favor of it, except for Grijalva and Representative Paul Gosar, Republican from Arizona, who did not vote. The only no vote from Arizona, Ansari wrote that the bill would serve as a license to discriminate against our immigrant communities, including Dreamers. The murder of Laken Riley was a horrific tragedy, but the anti-immigrant bill being pushed by House Republicans will do nothing to prevent this kind of violence or reform our broken immigration system, she said in a written statement released after the vote. Under this legislation, someone charged, just charged, not found guilty, could be immediately deported. This is a gross miscarriage of justice, and I voted no. Republicans, meanwhile, celebrated the bill as an overdue action to address crime committed by migrants. Representative Juan Ciscomani, Republican of Arizona, wrote that he voted in favor of the Lake and Riley Act to honor her memory and ensure bad actors here illegally are detained to prevent innocent lives from being lost in the crisis. Representative Eli Crane and Andy Biggs, both immigration hawks, criticized Democrats for voting against the bill. Crane called it appalling that 159 Democrats sided with criminal aliens by voting against this common sense measure. Delivering remarks on the House floor, Biggs listed statistics and recent examples of crimes committed by people who are in the country illegally. You could stand up and say, we're not bringing meaningful legislation. You can stand up and say that you feel real bad for Lake and Riley and her family. And how about all the other victims of illegal aliens who have committed crimes, Biggs said. But you know that the first thing they did that was illegal, they entered our country. You want to protect them? We have a rather large picture on our front page of the Tucson and Region News of Gabrielle Gifford. The title is Tucsonans Remember January 8th Attack. Former Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords closes her eyes during a ceremony Wednesday to remember the mass shooting in Tucson on January 8th, 2011. 6 people were killed, and Giffords was among 13 people who were wounded when a gunman opened fire during a political event outside a Northwest Side grocery store. My life changed forever, as did many others, Giffords posted Wednesday on X, and the world saw that I've always known. Tucson is a place of great courage. Our next story. Court rejects Valentine's Day execution ask. Attribution to Howard Fisher of Capital Media Services. Admitted killer Aaron Gunches will not get his wish to be executed on Valentine's Day. In an order Wednesday, the Arizona Supreme Court rejected a pleading by Gunches to forego any more legal maneuvering and put him to death after he pleaded guilty 2 decades ago to the 2002 murder of his girlfriend and ex-husband Ted Price. The justice said they want to hear arguments from all sides, including Attorney General Chris Mays, who wants Gunches executed but not on his schedule. They also rejected a last-ditch effort by a law professor at the University of Richmond School of Law to intercede in the case. Corina Barrett-Lane argued that whatever improvements the Arizona Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry has made to its lethal injection procedures still do not ensure Gunches will not suffer severe pain. She said, Penetrobarbital, the drug the state uses for executions, causes inmates to drown in their own fluids, which she said is excruciatingly painful, causing individuals to experience the sensation of being waterboarded. But Chief Justice Ann Scott Timmer, writing Wednesday's order, said questions about the conviction and sentencing should have been addressed at the trial court level. The only issue before the Supreme Court, Timmer said, is whether the conditions have been met to issue a warrant of execution. This means May's office has to file its request for the warrant by Friday afternoon. After that, the court will hear any responses, including from Gunches, who has advisory counsel, but has been representing himself. Then the state will get until the end of the month to reply to anything else. At this point, Timmer said the court is looking at the beating on February 11th. If the justices are satisfied that the laws are being followed, then they will issue the warrant. The state could have to carry it out exactly 35 days later. That provides time for the corrections department to compound the pentobarbital. If the execution goes forward on March the 18th, it will be the first since May suspended seeking such warrants shortly after taking office in January 2023. That followed a decision by Governor Katie Hobbs, also a newly elected Democrat, to appoint a special death penalty commissioner to study how the state is handling the practice. Hobbs said there has been a series of botched executions in Arizona, all conducted by retired federal magistrate David Dunin in a preliminary report last year raised questions about whether it was possible to humanely put someone to death in that manner. He said if the state was going to continue with executions, the most humane method might be a firing squad. Hobbs then fired Duncan. She simultaneously said she was confident a review of the process conducted by Ryan Thornell, her choice to head the prison system, shows the state is now ready again to resume executions without some of the prior problems. Mays was asking the Supreme Court to start the process of the necessary legal briefings when Gunches, in a handwritten pleading, told the justices they should skip all of that, referring to himself in the third person. He wrote that they should simply issue the warrant for September the 14th, where Gunches may have his long overdue sentence carried out. Wednesday's order does not specifically explain why the court rejected his plea. But a separate news release says the court remains committed to ensuring that justice is carried out in accordance with the law while maintaining fairness and transparency in its proceedings. Three inmates were executed in 2022 by lethal injections, with reports saying in some cases there was evidence problems by prison staffers in putting in the intravenous lines resulted in pain and bleeding. That is what led Mays to suspend all requests for execution warrants. Prior to that, there had been an 8-year pause following a botched procedure in which Joseph Wood was given 15 doses of two drug combinations over 2 hours. Gunches is one of 111 inmates on death row. Of those, 25, including Gunches, have either exhausted or waived appeals. Our next story. Watts closed on National Day of Mourning for Carter. Attribution to Shelby Slater, the Arizona Republic. Thursday, January the 9th, is a National Day of Mourning in honor of former President Jimmy Carter. President Joe Biden declared January the 9th a National Day of Mourning, issued an executive order closing all executive departments and agencies of the federal government that day, and ordered U.S. flags to fly at half-mast for 30 days. The day of mourning was set to coincide with Carter's funeral in Washington, D.C. He will lie in state beginning late Tuesday until early Thursday morning, when his body will be taken to the Washington National Cathedral for the National Funeral Service. Here's what Arizonans need to know about what will be open and closed. Post offices. The U.S. Postal Services told the U.S. Today network there will be no mail delivery on January the 9th. Stock market. The New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ will be closed on January the 9th. NASDAQ bond markets will be open for reduced hours, closing at 2 p.m., according to a recommendation from the Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. Federal offices. Federal offices will be closed on January the 9th in honor of Carter's death. Similar to a federal holiday, not all federal workers will be exempt from working, as some could be deemed as vital. Businesses and banks. Businesses and banks are not required or expected to close for a day of mourning, though many do close on federal holidays. Grocery stores, restaurants, and all other stores will be open unless they choose to close. We will now move to the nation and world news. Our first story. Hostage body found in tunnel, Israeli army says. Attribution to the Associated Press. Israeli soldiers recovered the body of a 53-year-old hostage in an underground tunnel in southern Gaza, the military said on Wednesday, and the army was determined if another set of remains belongs to the man's son. As Yosef al-Zardani's body was discovered, Israeli and Hamas considered a ceasefire deal that would free the remaining hostages and halt the fighting in Gaza. Israel says about a third of the remaining 100 hostages have died, but believes as many as half could be dead. Yosef and his son Hamra were thought to be still alive before Wednesday's announcement, and news about their fate could ramp up pressure on Israel to move forward with a deal. Al-Zawahiri and three of his children were among 250 hostages taken captive after Hamas-led militants stormed into southern Israel, killing 1,200 people. Israel's military response has killed more than 45,800 Palestinians, according to the territory's health ministry. It does not say how many were fighters, but says women and children make up more than half of their fatalities. Our next story. Schultz, Blinken respect borders. Attribution to the Associated Press. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said Wednesday that the principle of inviolability of the borders applies to every country, however powerful, and suggests that expansionist comments by US President-elect Donald Trump were met with incomprehension among European leaders. Meanwhile, in Paris, outgoing U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken advised the world Wednesday not to waste a lot of time on what Trump has been saying about Greenland. Trump said Tuesday he won't rule out the use of military force to seize control of the Panama Canal as well as Greenland, an autonomous territory of Denmark, a longtime U.S. ally and a member of NATO and the European Union. He declared U.S. control of both to be vital to American national security. In a hastily arranged statement to reporters, Scholz said he spoke Wednesday with several European leaders, whom he didn't name, and the president of the European Council. He said it was a long-standing central principle that borders must not be moved by force, a principle that Russian President Vladimir Putin violated with his war in Ukraine. He said that during the Wednesday's discussion, a sudden incomprehension became clear regarding current comments from the U.S. The principle of the inviolability of borders applies to every country, regardless of whether it lies to the east of us or to the west, and every state must keep to it, regardless of whether it is a small country or a very powerful state, Scholz said. Scholz did not refer to Trump by name or mention the details of his comments. Blinken said Trump's ambitions are unlikely to amount to anything more than talk. The idea expressed about Greenland is obviously not a good one, the senior U.S. diplomat said during a trip in Paris for meetings. Maybe more important, it's obviously one that's not going to happen, so we probably shouldn't waste a lot of time talking about it. France's Foreign Minister Jean-Noël Barrot also played down any possibility of U.S. forces being deployed against Denmark. Danish Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen also says she does not believe the United States will use military or economic power to secure control of Greenland. Our next story. President Biden cast doubt on fitness to serve 4 more years. Attribution to Darlene Superville of the Associated Press. President Joe Biden, in an interview days before he leaves office, cast doubt on his fitness to serve another 4 years, even as he maintained he could have won election to a second term. The outgoing Democratic president also told USA Today, in the interview published Wednesday, that he tried during his Oval Office meeting with President-elect Donald Trump to discourage the Republican from going after his political opponents, as he said he would. Also, Biden said he had not decided whether to issue sweeping pardons to preemptively protect those individuals from any possible retribution by Trump or the incoming administration. I don't know, Biden responded when USA Today's Washington Bureau Chief Susan Page asked if he would have had the vigor to serve another 4 years in office. Biden and Page sat down at the White House on Sunday for the president's rare interview with a print publication. Biden, 82, talks about how he didn't intend to run for president in 2020, but says that when Trump sought re-election last year, I really thought I had the best chance of beating him. But I also wasn't looking to be president when I was 85 years old, 86 years old. But I don't know who the hell knows, he said. So far, so good, but who knows what I'm going to be when I'm 86 years old. But he believes he could have been re-elected. It's presumptuous to say that, but I think yes, Biden said. He said his assessment was based on the polling he reviewed but did not elaborate. Concerned about Biden's age and fitness had followed him since he announced his bid for re-election, but he dropped out of the presidential race under pressure in July after faltering in a debate against Trump. He endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris. She lost to the Republican. In the interview, Biden said he is considering preemptive pardons but has not decided whether to issue any. When he and Trump met in the Oval Office after the election, Biden said, "I tried to make it clear that there was no need and it was counterintuitive for his interest to go back and try to settle scores." Trump didn't answer one way or the other, Biden said, adding, "He just basically listened." Biden said his greatest fear is that Trump will eliminate parts of major climate legislation Biden signed in 2022. He also took Trump to task for implying that the driver of the deadly New York Days vehicle attack in New Orleans was an immigrant who had entered the U.S. from Mexico. The FBI identified the driver as Shamsuddin Jabbar, a U.S. citizen from Texas and an Army veteran. 14 people were killed and nearly 36 were injured in the attack. Jabbar was killed by police. Biden said he bets many people read what Trump said about the attacker and believe it. "How do you deal with that?" he said, referring to his successor as someone not known for telling the truth. Our next story. Proud Boy sentenced to 14 months in Capitol riot. Former police officer who stormed the U.S. Capitol with fellow members of the far-right Proud Boys extremist group was sentenced on Wednesday to 14 months in prison for joining the January 6, 2021 attack by a mob of Donald Trump supporters, court records show. Nathaniel Tuck and other Proud Boys, including his father, were among the first wave of rioters who entered the Capitol grounds after the mob broke through the police lines, according to prosecutors. Tuck, 32, of Apopka, Florida, pushed past police officers to enter the Capitol and berated officers trying to hold off the crowd. He later posed with other Proud Boys members for a celebratory photograph outside the Capitol. U.S. District Judge Timothy Kelly allowed Tuck to remain free until he must report to prison and begin serving his 14-month sentence. The judge ordered him to pay a $2,000 fine and $2,000 in restitution, court records show. Our next story. Longshoremen reach a pact with ports and shippers. U.S. longshoremen reached a contract agreement with ports and shippers on Wednesday, averting a potential strike that could have damaged the American economy. The International Longshoremen's Association Union and the U.S. Maritime Alliance of Ports and Shipping Companies said they reached a tentative agreement for a 6-year contract. The two sides were facing a January the 15th deadline. Union members and alliance members must still ratify the agreement. Until then, the existing contract will continue to be in effect. This is a win-win agreement that leaves the ILA jobs support American consumers and businesses and keeps the American economy, the key hub of the global marketplace, the two sides said in a joint statement. Our next story. The Biden administration will continue protecting about 2,000 grizzly bears in 4 Rocky Mountain states, despite objections from Republicans-led states, U.S. wildlife officials said on Wednesday. Protection will be withdrawn in states where the animals no longer can be found.